Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast created by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. It's our goal to humanize Alzheimer's research so that our community, our patients, our participants, and anyone else interested can get a better understanding of the work that's happening to fight back against this disease. My name is Nathaniel Chin, and I'm a geriatric memory clinic physician at the University of Wisconsin. I'm also the family member and son of someone with dementia. I'll be serving as your host for this podcast and asking the questions I believe are in the minds of many in our community. Thanks for joining us. Today on Dementia Matters, our guest is Dr. Andrea Gilmore-Bikofsky, a PhD researcher and assistant professor of nursing at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Her work is focused on promoting accurate and early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias, optimizing patient care, and improving healthcare for dementia patients in high-risk and disadvantaged groups. Today, we are going to talk with Dr. Gilmore-Bikofsky about her most recent research, which led to the creation of an approach that helps nurses identify dementia symptoms in hospital patients and manage those patients throughout their hospitalization. Dr. Gilmore-Bikofsky, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm going to start with two personal questions. Why research in dementia, and why the hospital setting?
I had some formative experiences early on in my training. I knew that I was really interested in nursing. The idea of focusing on how people respond to health and illness was really exciting to me. And so I went and became a certified nursing assistant while I was waiting to enter my baccalaureate program in nursing. And I ended up in a skilled nursing facility caring predominantly for people with dementia and other cognitive impairments. And it was by large the most life-changing experience that I've had. And I was motivated and inspired by some nursing assistants who really demonstrated a profound capacity for finding the life that's left and maximizing it. And I wanted to study that. I wanted to codify it and to communicate about it. And I've been hooked ever since. I'm fascinated and I'm really committed to trying to improve care for individuals living with dementia. And why thinking about hospital settings? Primarily, most of the rigorous research in dementia care has been done in community and nursing home settings. And it wasn't until later on in my training that I found there was a large gap in acute care and hospital work.
And there's still this important relationship between hospitals and nursing homes where you started your interests, in that many people these days are being transferred from hospitals to nursing homes and back and forth.
Yes, people living with dementia experience many transitions in and out of different care settings. And unfortunately, important information about who they are, what's important to them, and what works well for them as individuals is often missed. This is not uncommon for you or me or anyone who goes in and out of different settings. However, people with dementia can't necessarily advocate for themselves and articulate what those missing pieces are. So we do see a lot of challenges when people come into the hospital setting and may not have a caregiver with them in terms of whether the care they're receiving is individualized and is optimized for their unique needs.
Well, speaking of being admitted to the hospital, what is the typical experience that someone with dementia might have when they're admitted into a hospital setting?
I think that what we know from talking to caregivers and from observational work is that these transitions are really challenging for someone with dementia. It is difficult when you are in a new environment and some of those familiarities, familiar faces, things that perhaps offer comfort aren't available in the hospital setting. We also know that for someone without cognitive difficulties, the hospital environment is a stressful setting. Lots of noise, lots of disruption, and lack of anchors and routines that might help someone who's experiencing cognitive losses make it through the day more easily.
Now, through your experience, you saw this need to develop guidelines or an approach to help nurses identify dementia symptoms in hospitalized patients. So what are these symptoms and what are the challenges in identifying them and treating them in a hospital?
Yeah, so these symptoms, oftentimes people think of them as something called agitation. They have many different names. They're sometimes called neuropsychiatric symptoms. They're sometimes called behavioral and psychological symptoms in dementia. And we essentially understand that these are behaviors someone exhibits. It could be verbal, it could be nonverbal actions that aren't typical behavior, and they can be really challenging for caregivers to interface with. So it may be attempting to leave a unit or attempting to leave a house. It may be sometimes resisting participating in a certain part of care, not being willing to eat, might be one example, or perhaps calling out frequently. These are very common, and they occur more and more as someone's dementia becomes more advanced. So there are lots of challenges to managing these symptoms. And one really basic challenge is understanding why they happen. And one of the challenges is what we can do to prevent them and to limit the negative impact on the person with dementia who might be experiencing them.
Is it safe to say then these behavioral symptoms, this quote agitation, is really what we see in a person, and the key is to understand why they're experiencing this and showing us these symptoms?
Yes, absolutely. There are lots of different ways of thinking about why someone might have these symptoms. One common way that we talk about it is as a meaningful form of communication, which is a really more, I think, useful and positive framing that someone with dementia who perhaps isn't able to communicate their needs or identify what it is that's bothering them and communicate that clearly has this other form of communication in their behavior to tell those around them that something's not quite right. So I see it as a meaningful cue for understanding that there might be some unmet need that we really need to address, and it can be challenging to find out what that need is. And that's what this new approach is trying to help nurses do.
Well, and the way you frame it is very, well, it's a lot nicer than a person's agitated, now we have to handle this. And so you're explaining it in a much more, I would say, human term or humanistic term for us to really respond to a person and help them.
Absolutely. And this is an understanding of these symptoms that has been around since the early 90s. I think it's now really well accepted and has started to transfer to other disciplines. Part of what we're trying to do with our approach is to offer flexible yet standardized guidance for nurses that they can anchor on for understanding what are the approaches they can use in their interactions with someone to reduce the likelihood of some of these symptoms happening, and trying to do it in a way that looks really similar to other work processes that they use, so it's familiar.
I like that. And really, your research and protocol incorporated 4 integrated processes. So individual needs assessment, prevention strategies, systematic pain assessment, treatment, and then symptom-driven treatment. Now, I suspect these same guidelines and processes can be applied by our caregivers at home. So could you share some of these common needs and prevention strategies that the nurses used in your study?
Sure, absolutely. So first, we're trying to identify these. What we really did was actually look at the robust literature that's available. There has been a lot of work done in this area, mostly in nursing home and home settings. And we tried to identify what are those key features or key ingredients and the approaches that seem to be really effective and how can we consolidate them. And one really key ingredient that's certainly transferable between hospitals and informal caregivers in the home is tailoring things and making them as specific to this person who has lived a long life and has unique interests and abilities, and tailoring what we do with them to their specific likes and, in many instances, their dislikes, and trying to be responsive to that. Another is, as you mentioned, pain management, and I think that's a really big one that gets overlooked. Many older people experience daily persistent pain, and people with dementia, we've seen in a lot of research, their pain is undertreated pretty significantly, so making sure that there's appropriate medication for that. And then the last two components kind of go hand in hand. It's essentially wanting to identify what the specific behavior is and wanting to help them respond to that behavior in an intentional way. So if someone perhaps is agitated or calling out, trying to help them listen to the emotion of that calling out and respond to that emotion, and trying to help them think about why they think that behavior might be happening and what might be contributing and whether it can be eliminated, as opposed to just throwing any solution at it, trying to have it be more systematic.
Speaking of trying to understand a symptom, how should a non-trained caregiver really assess a person's pain in someone who can't verbally communicate that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really, the anchors that we use in practice, I think, can absolutely be used by a caregiver at home, and they're looking for nonverbal pain indicators. So these are basically cues that you can see in someone's behavior that we know are consistent with the experience of pain. So it might be something like, if you're trying to help someone get up, maybe they are guarding themselves, or maybe they're hesitant to get up, or maybe you can see in their face that there's a lot of discomfort or grimacing. And even things that, like, crying is another symptom of pain, especially on movement. So looking for those nonverbal pain indicators.
In your study in the hospital, when nurses identified someone was in pain, what did they do for it?
That's a great question. We actually did something a little bit different, which is try to prevent and get ahead of pain before it becomes problematic. When someone's in the hospital, they have acute conditions, they're more likely to be in pain. So anyone who demonstrated pain or was at risk for experiencing agitation because they have had it before, and we know that from asking caregivers, we would put this person on scheduled Tylenol. And actually, there are some high-quality studies that have been done that have shown that scheduling Tylenol throughout the day, of course, being thoughtful about what other medications someone has, that leads to reduction in pain symptoms. People engage more and are more active, and we see that they have a lot less agitation, significantly so. So that's one of the first steps we take. And we ask them to keep reassessing it if they see more changes, to make sure that they've looked for those pain indicators. And if those pain indicators are still present, to have a conversation with the provider that we think this person may still be experiencing untreated pain.
Well, so how is an inpatient unit and a hospital different than a nursing home, different than being at home in a person's individual place with an informal caregiver? And how does a healthcare team manage dementia symptoms in each of those settings?
I think there are many differences, but the most impactful of those, I think, is the built environment. So hospital settings don't often have community areas or dining areas where you can support someone with those routines that they may be familiar with throughout their lives. Whereas in a nursing home setting, you very often have some built physical spaces that make the environment more home-like. And of course, ideally a home, while we know that we need to sometimes look at safety issues with rugs and railings, typically it feels more home-like. And oftentimes, because of regulations and restrictions with what someone can do with the environment in a hospital setting, it's not always feasible to modify the environment as much as you can in a nursing home or an assisted living. And I think that really has an impact on someone with dementia. It's not as familiar, it may not be as comfortable, and it may feel very confusing to be in an environment that looks like a hospital if one doesn't understand or anticipate that they should be there.
In our hospital system, and in our clinics actually, we've been asking patients and their families to bring in familiar items when they get admitted to the hospital. And is that really for that whole sense of something familiar to anchor them when they're in this artificial setting?
Yes, absolutely. That is a fantastic recommendation, and it's something that we have recommended through some of our other research where we've talked to people who are working in nursing homes and asked them, what does a seamless transition into this environment look like? And they go to tremendous lengths sometimes to build that room environment in a way where it's very familiar to someone. It's one less hurdle for someone who may already be struggling with making decisions, with communicating their needs, to feel at ease. And I think if it's appropriate for the hospital setting and, you know, doesn't violate any regulations, then absolutely you want to do everything you can to keep the person feeling like they're in a familiar setting.
Well, speaking of regulations, you know, what are some of the challenges in putting these guidelines into practice that you experienced with this study?
Yeah, so there are many challenges. And one major challenge actually has to do with the number of staff and how long people are in the hospital. So, of course, staffing is different in a hospital than it is in a nursing home. And one challenge that we see is that in order to individualize what you're doing with someone throughout the day, you need to know them. And staff in a hospital setting are inherently at a disadvantage unless they go out of their way to find out who someone is. And that's one of the things that we try to have them do. But they may not have a 1, 2, 3, or 4 year history with someone where you really know their quirks and what makes them happy and what games they enjoy. So those are things that we see people do more regularly in nursing homes, and it's really difficult for staff in a hospital to do that. For one, they're not familiar with how to do that. One thing that we found is just doing an activity with someone. If they have someone one-on-one in their room, people haven't engaged with someone in that level. So I think there are some training challenges, and then this lack of a longitudinal history with someone, I think, is a barrier to staff for adopting some of these components and doing it fully.
On the end of the patient and the family members, well, what can they do, or what should we be saying to them to help prepare for a hospital stay if their loved one gets admitted?
As much as one can, accompanying someone with these transitions, I think, is really helpful. And of course, I know that all of the caregivers I work with are phenomenal advocates for the person they're providing care for, but being prepared to be an advocate, having information available about someone's personal history, their likes, their dislikes, their long-standing routines. An example might be if someone doesn't like to wake up early, trying to see if it's possible to maintain that routine and not disrupt someone's long-standing habits. And certainly asking a lot of questions about what's going on with care. I think that's key at any point in the care continuum, whether it's at the PCP office or in a nursing home, asking a lot of questions about why things are being done the way they're being done, and bringing your own expertise for what people in the hospital could be doing differently. We know that caregivers have really figured a lot out and aren't always asked to share, but I think be brave and share.
I like that. And now your approach, which really empowers caregivers and advocates, it's called proactive, personalized approach and targeted interventions. So will you be incorporating a modified version in a hospital setting?
Some of the components of this program have been really, really well adopted and are well received by family caregivers. Some are more challenging to use. So what we will do is keep those components that are working well and work to revise the other components to make them easier to engage with, and hopefully test this in other settings in more rigorous ways.
Well, I look forward to hearing those results. And really, thank you for joining us on Dementia Matters.
Thank you so much.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazaleski and edited by Zoe Rugel. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at WisconsinADRC. If you have any questions or comments, email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.